Today on Movie Wallahs, we review Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and Transcendence. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hi.
We're not, Yazdi, you're not here in person today.
I'm not, and it's very appropriate since we're going to be discussing Transcendence.
Oh, that's true. And I noticed what's really funny is Joe's put the computer where you normally sit, so it actually looks like you're at the table. Funny that you did that, actually.
I'm waiting for the cat to show up.
Yeah, I was wondering if she'd come.
So I will be the vaguely disembodied voice during today's recording.
Oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah, actually, that's pretty cool.
And that's a really good segue.
I should take a picture of this setup.
Oh, yeah, and you can post it.
for what it's worth.
Oh, that is kind of creepy.
It's weird, isn't it?
That's weird.
Anyhow. So, been a lot going on since we last recorded. We went to the Indian Film Festival. We covered the GMCLA Voice Awards, and hopefully there'll be some material out on our website in the not-too-distant future.
And Yazdi did a Tribeca Film Festival.
Yazdi's been to Tribeca. And we saw a terrific production of Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight script.
Read live.
So, yeah, maybe we can talk about that briefly in the next podcast, but film festival season is upon us. I think IFLA was great, the Indian Film Festival of LA. Some real treats there. And I know, Yazdi, I think you've put some material up on our website.
For Tribeca.
And, I don't think we've formally reviewed anything from IFLA, but there were some good movies this time round.
Yeah, quality of movies was brilliant, and I'm committed to writing something up soon.
Yeah, me as well. And I think, some of those movies really resonated with me at the Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles. Some really remarkable finds, you know, some very mainstream movies, but also some, you know, fringe of fringe movies. In fact, the movie which won Best Film is a pretty radical, almost call to arms against social injustice. The movie called Fundry about the Untouchables in India.
Which we all watched and all liked. Yeah.
So really good job, I think, with picking films.
Yeah, my favorite was the one about the auction house. The documentary about two brothers in Calcutta who run a, you know, second, third generation auction house. One left, he came back, and just the struggles of family relationships, and set in this wonderful little dusty little shop full of gems. I just fell in love with that movie. Yeah, so more to come on our website.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, do check out your local film festivals. I mean, anyone listening to this podcast presumably has enough of an interest in movies too, to enjoy a film festival. So, you know, if you haven't been to one, then really do check them out. And, you know, even the ethnic ones are great. I mean, the Indian Film Festival, I kind of was somewhat nervous that we were going to get a lot of Bollywood specials, but
I don't think you saw
really
one.
Indian cinema has moved on to the extent that you do get the Bollywood movies still, but there's some really great art house type movies that are coming out of India.
Yeah, I mean, I personally believe this is kind of the golden era for Indian cinema. I mean, really, even what's coming mainstream these days is just remarkable and inventive, and you know, and then obviously what is outside of mainstream also is tremendous. I think this is the best of times for Indian cinema. And I also couldn't agree more with what you said, Joe. I mean, I've mentioned this before, but people always give me a weird look when I mention a film festival. They think it's some kind of a fringe thing that crazy people do. And it really is not. I sound like a broken record, but it's really one of the most delightful experiences you can have. And it's no different than going and watching any other movie at the cinemas. So, you know, honestly, it should be on your bucket list. If you have never been to a film festival, you should go at least once, and then you'll be hooked, and then you'll go more.
Yeah, I think the thing I like is that you're really going in there with no knowledge of what's going to come on the screen for the next 90 to, you know, 200 minutes. And you are the person who's seeing this for the first time. No other audience has ever seen these movies, really. So it's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for those of you in the LA area, anyone in Southern California, really, do check out the Los Angeles Film Festival, the LAFF or LAF Film Festival. That's coming up in June. We've been to that film festival for 2 years in a row now, and we're looking forward to going again this year. They do a really marvelous job of curating that film festival. I think the picks that we've seen there have just been top notch year after year.
And I would say at least one or two have made it to the nominations list, always. If not more, at least one or two. Top class documentaries have always made it into the nominations.
Yeah.
And again, that LA Film Festival is so casual. You know, you really don't have to fight to stand in lines. You know, most movies, most screenings, you will, even if you show up 10 minutes before it, you'll be able to get a ticket and go watch it. It's really laid back. It's the thing to do.
And the best taco truck ever.
That's reason in itself to go.
That's reason in itself to go, right?
Yeah.
Our favorite taco truck. Okay.
All right.
And then one final thing. I mean, for me personally, the best thing about any film festival is if you attend a public screening, you are almost guaranteed that the cast and the crew and the director will be there in attendance, and you will have a Q&A with them, and you may be too shy like me and not actually ask any questions. But it's like driving a Ferrari and then afterwards getting to meet with the person who built the Ferrari. I mean, how often do you get to do that? It's just amazing.
Well, the passion that it takes to get a film made, especially when you're a relatively unknown filmmaker, just comes across in their presentation. I mean, for many of them, it's a realization of a dream. And in some ways, you get to share in that experience, which is one of the things I like a lot. You know, even if the movie didn't turn out to be perfect, I can't help but admire the efforts of everyone there that took to make it. And, you know, you're sharing in their big moment, which I think is another, you know, fantastic human reason for going, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's jump into our reviews. We've been babbling there for 5 or 10 minutes. So what would you like to start with? We have Captain America, Winter Soldier, or Transcendence.
Yazdi can pick since he is transcending today.
Let's do the Captain.
So after being deemed unfit for military service, Steve Rogers volunteers for a top secret research project that turns him into Captain America. This is from the last film. So he is now a superhero dedicated to defending America's ideals. And I don't think I want to say more than that for the intro, other than who it's directed by, which is Anthony Russo and Joe Russo. And this stars Chris Evans, Anthony Mackie, Samuel L. Jackson, Scarlett Johansson, and Robert Redford, among others. So, Yazdi, since you picked it, you can go first.
Okay. So if Hollywood insists on rolling out Marvel installments every 6 months and we have to live with them, then I guess this is not a bad way to go about doing it. Which sounds like faint praise, so let me try that again. I had a real fondness for the very first Captain America film, which came out, I think, a couple years ago, because it had this very resolutely square, you know, clean, you know, old-fashioned vibe about it. And now with the second one, I'm willing to call Captain America the best of these superhero films, and that includes Iron Man, Thor, Batman, and the whole lot. I like this movie a lot.
Hmm. Joe?
Yes, we're in total alignment over a comic book movie for a change. This has to be my favorite movie of the Marvel franchise to date. And that includes The Avengers, which I think a lot of people will disagree with me on. But this was just such a well-judged and a very well-executed comic book movie. It kind of, you're going to love me for this, but it made me realize just what was wrong with Man of Steel. Because
yes, I know. Yes.
Because this is how to do it, right? I mean, it wasn't overly campy in any way. It was very real, but it had an element of fun to it that I think was sorely missing now that I look back at Man of Steel. Now, I like the brooding superhero with issues, but in so many ways, Captain America as a character is a lot like Superman, right? He's the Boy Scout. He's the absolute good. And instead of wrestling with those issues as they insisted on doing in Man of Steel, Captain America remains absolutely true to his core values all the way through. And that brings a kind of a real wonder to the movie that I think just made it a pleasure to behold. There's many other things I liked about the movie, but I'll let Rashmi talk now.
Okay, so the fundamental problem with this movie for me is A, it assumes that we are all Marvel fans and we know everything there is to know, not only about Captain America, but the whole Marvel universe. For instance, I didn't know what S.H.I.E.L.D. was, and it was mentioned so many times that I thought I should go out and read a pamphlet about it before I go and see the movie, or I would advise people to do their homework. And then B, I think there are so many spin-offs and cameos of the Marvel characters that I couldn't tell where we were in the chronology. And so when we watched The Winter Soldier, it felt like we were taking a step back because we'd already seen some progression of Captain America in the Avengers. And then there's a S.H.I.E.L.D. spin-off on TV. And so although I enjoyed the movie in the moment, I think it was just more of what we've seen before and it didn't really bring anything new. That's not to say it's bad. It just wasn't excellent in my book.
I just think compared to all those other movies, this one has just a good, firm backbone. I mean, it is shameless entertainment. It is completely playing by the rules, but it's somehow done right. And I don't know, there's a sense of fun about the movie. The action scenes are thoughtful and the explosions mostly are not meaningless. I mean, I saw the movie twice. I saw it originally and then I saw it again because some friends wanted to see it. And the second time around, I really appreciated the choreography of the action scenes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many of them, but there's one in an elevator in particular where, you know, he gets into an elevator and he realizes everybody who's stepping in is eventually going to try and kill him. And it's a great marvel, if pardon my expression, it's a marvel of choreography, how it's done. And, you know, one of my big complaints about, you know, Iron Man 3 and Man of Steel was that you could never tell what was exploding, who was hitting whom. It's just like a blur of just violence. And there's none of that in this movie. So I really like that there's no laziness about how the movie has been structured. Every scene has been given a fair degree of thought.
Yeah, I mean, totally agree with you on that. And, you know, Rashmi, just to counter your point about the Marvel Universe, because, I mean, you make a good point. This is definitely a movie that has a lot of things there for the hardcore comic book fans. I mean, if you grew up in this universe, then I think you're going to be having, like, miniature orgasms, like, in every scene when they have these little references that I think were well beyond the reach of, you know, us less comic book initiated, but I didn't find the movie inaccessible. There was still plenty there for me to enjoy. And even though I know that they were talking about things in the universe and, you know, it's one of those movies where you have to stay until the end because you get a little couple of tidbits pop up for the next movie. Which meant nothing to me. I mean, there were two little things that, you know, half the audience, they were like, oh my God, you know, I can't wait for the next one. It meant nothing to me. I was like, oh, what? I sat through the credits for this. But I still, you know, just to counter your point, think that this movie was perfectly accessible for me. And really, I know very little about the Marvel Universe. I mean, all I know is from what we've seen in the movies.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's inaccessible. I'm just saying that I feel like I missed out on the excellence of the movie because I didn't understand the universe. And maybe if I'd understood all of those references, I would have had a better time. But I agree with you both. You know, it was great action and I did enjoy it in the moment. And for me, there were some really nice little touches like, you know, Captain America keeps this little list of things that he has to catch up on that says things like, you know, Thai food and DVDs. It's really cute. There are some really cute touches that acknowledge that he's missed a whole amount of time. And then I like the fact that, you know, it was a good story about the moral of old versus new. And I like that. There were some really nice touches in it. So it was definitely, for me, Esty, I know you really liked the first one. I definitely like this second one more than the first one.
I like both of them because, for me, maybe it's how I grew up. For me, a superhero meant something inherently joyful. It meant somebody flying into the sky. And, you know, I grew up with that sense of wonder and giddiness. And I inherently have a problem with brooding superheroes because we are all as we are all as humans brooding enough. I don't need my superhero to be miserable and brooding as well. And I think what I really like about the Captain America movies is that it has this very, you know, it's so unrealistically hopeful, the whole Captain Universe, the Captain America universe, you know, and Captain America himself is so, you know, square and by the books and
right.
You know, all he's these. Like a big vanilla cupcake.
Right.
He's the and Boy Scout.
He's very patriotic.
Yeah, well, right. He and that's the whole thing with Captain America, you know, America, jingoism. I mean, he's like, you know, the American way. And I think that was beautifully done. I mean, I don't find brooding superheroes that offensive, but I do think that this is how you do the good ones. Because, again, you know, you look at heroes like Superman, and they're always idealistic. You know, they don't break the rules. They are the rules. I mean, that's really what they exist for.
Yeah, and to give credit where it's due, I think a lot of it comes from the casting. And Chris Evans, you know, I have to say, is a most agreeable screen presence.
Yeah.
And, you know, with his aw shucks, you know, persona. And it should get annoying, all that earnestness, you know, for 2 hours, but it does not, you know. And I think, you know, Chris Evans approaches that, some of that nobility that another Chris, which is Christopher Reeve, had in the Superman movies.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, you inherently believe in this straight arrow, clean American sensibility that both of them project. And I think a lot of the movie's success comes from that as well.
Yeah, but Yazdi, I have to say that if it was just, you know, 2 hours of Chris Evans doing, you know, Mr. Nice Guy, it would get dull. For mm-hmm. me, the movie succeeded because Scarlett Johansson was a really good balance to his niceness. And that's not to say that she was mean, but she was a really cool sidekick. And it was really nice to see her not as, like, you know, the slut in the movie, the easy girl. I really liked her performance in this. I mean, great stunts.
She got hired because of how she looks in that cat suit, but that's a whole different discussion. But I do think that character...
superhero that, and supermodel.
But that character warrants its own movie. I mean, I think that's one of the more interesting characters in the film that I would just like to see more of. Not just visually, but also I think there's a really interesting backstory and an angle to that character that I just want to get more of.
Yeah, I mean, she was introduced very unceremoniously, I think, in the second Iron Man movie. And then she was in Avengers, and she's here again in a pretty major part. And when you think about it, her character does not really have any superpower. She's just
kick-ass.
A good fighter.
She's brilliant.
Just a good fighter. She doesn't have inherently any superpowers. Like, she doesn't have a shield or an arrow or whatever. But again, you know, talk about good casting, because, you know, with that pneumatic physicality and that husky voice, I mean, she makes the perfect foil to, you know, the straight arrow lead character. And again, I like the relationship. It was not overplayed in the movie between Captain America and her, and it just had the right lightness of touch.
Yeah. What did you guys think of Robert Redford? It was interesting to see Robert Redford in a superhero movie for me. I was a little bit shocked.
In case it sounds like I like everything about the movie, the one thing I did not like about the movie is some of the dialogue is pretty bad. I mean, it's howlingly bad. And, you know, it just seems unusually cruel to have somebody of Robert Redford's stature say things like "Hail Hydra," you know? I mean, it's just like Robert Redford should never have to say "Hail Hydra."
It's true.
But
I didn't have a problem with that at all. I think by at that point in the movie, I was so wrapped up in its universe that just felt right. I mean, I agree, you know, in retrospect, coming out of the movie theater, you know, when you get your perspective back, it's a little odd, but in the moment, I was there with him. I mean, I would have stood right alongside and been like "Hail Hydra" myself.
Yeah, I also want to say the one thing I did like about this movie was this had a really good evil guy. The baddie was really good, almost as good as the Terminator for me.
The Winter Soldier.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I guess the least said about that, the better.
Yeah, and even think about the, I mean, this is what I mean by the movie has a good backbone. It has a really good spine to it, because that whole reveal of the bad guy and his pathology and everything is really woven into the story pretty well. Let's face it, you know, any time Hollywood decides to make a superhero out of a great actor such as Anthony McKee, you know, I can live by that.
Yeah, great character, great acting.
Great actor, you know. I'm so glad that he gets to be in a usually successful mainstream movie so more people find out about him.
Yeah. Okay, let's wind this one up. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
I think it's clear already that I enjoyed this movie a lot. Like you said, it had some really devastatingly good action sequences. I mean, really, really well choreographed stuff. Lots of explosions too. And, you know, I live for those moments in movies. I like the crash bangy stuff. So, you know, if I was to criticize one thing, it would be that I wished we'd spent a little bit more time in the kind of the current affairs type themes that were in the movie, the kind of the pre-crime government spying stuff. Cause I think that was a really very interesting plot element. So, but that's nitpicking. This is my favorite movie of the year so far, I think. I kind of find myself surprised to say that, but I really enjoyed it. It's my favorite Marvel movie to date and the best comic book movie since The Dark Knight. So for me, this is going to get a 9 out of 10.
Wow.
I loved it.
Yazdi.
Yeah, I mean, every complaint that I have for every other superhero movie, this movie seems to have been constructed specifically to deflect those complaints.
They heard you.
They heard me. And, considering that the low bar that this movie had, I mean, it's a sequel to the most, almost the least known of all the Marvel franchises. I think the film does an admirable, admirable job. I mean, it didn't nearly need to be as good as it is. And I like that the movie does not have random carnage in it. It's well constructed. I have a fondness for the characters. It just does everything right. And we know it's so difficult to do that these days in a large, big budget mainstream film. So it makes Hollywood look good. It is my best comic book film version of any as well. So I give it an 8.5 out of 10 and then back down to 8.
Wow. So overall, I agree with you. It's a good film, but for me, it wasn't great. I think if you're a fan of the franchise, like Joe said, you're going to love this movie. For me, it was a solid 7 out of 10.
Okay.
I've never wanted a shield so badly. Like, the way that he wields that, that thing as both an offensive and defensive object.
Yeah, it was cool.
It's just so beautifully done, and it's solid, and it's clangy, and it's just, oh, really good fun.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Transcendence.
So celebrated cinematographer Wally Pfister makes his directorial debut with Transcendence. And Transcendence is the story of Dr. Wilcaster, played by Johnny Depp, who is one of those great intelligent minds in a future time. And he's trying to develop a completely intelligent artificial intelligence, if you will, sentient, self-thinking intelligence. And while he's working towards that goal of developing machines that think, something terrible happens, and essentially it becomes evident that he's going to die. And although his body dies, and I'm not giving anything away, this happens fairly early in the movie, although his body dies, it so turns out that his wife finds a way to invest in his mind and have that mind take control of the machines that he had started to work with. And so starts this rapidly escalating story between man versus machine. And, you know, is this person who she thinks is her husband really her husband controlling machines, or is it some other evil force? And so the movie is a commentary on man versus machine. It stars Johnny Depp, Rebecca Hall, Paul Bettany, Cillian Murphy, and Morgan Freeman. And because Wally Pfister has been a cinematographer for all of Chris Nolan's movies, at least the Batman movies, Nolan shows up here as an executive producer of the film as well. What did you guys think about Transcendence? It's been very polarizing.
a disappointment. I was so looking forward to this movie, but it turned out to be a big dud for me. Exceptional idea, good cast, but really poorly executed. This ended up looking like a distant cousin of Her that just didn't live up to the promise, with a bit of splice and the East thrown in for good measure.
Sure. Very interesting that you mention Her. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I was rooting for Wally Pfister through every moment of this movie because, you know, he's won Oscars as DP, probably most famously known for all of his work with Christopher Nolan and, as you mentioned, Yazdi. So I was rooting for him all the way through this, and I think I have to acknowledge that there's a certain bias, therefore, in my interpretation of this movie, because the universe and its mother have completely panned this movie. It's really gotten a lot of beatings in reviews. I mean, the comments on Rotten Tomatoes, I mean, they're just offensive, and I just didn't see the movie in that same way. But I think it is because of my own personal bias. I like Wally Pfister, and I really want him to be a great director. I think the movie has some problems, but as kind of a high concept piece of sci-fi, it works for me on a cerebral level. It just fails in the second half because I'm so used to the crash bangy stuff that the way that this movie resolves the situation is just not what we're used to seeing as audiences. And I think therein lies the disappointment for many.
So that was so unbiased.
No, it's ridiculous.
I know, so biased. I never know the difference.
Let me just say it. I think this movie is 2 hours of nonsense. Okay, that's all it is. It's 2 hours of gobbledygook. And listen, I love this kind of trippy, sci-fi, ambitious fare. I mean, Cloud Atlas, which everybody hated, was one of my best films of the year, year it was released. But, you know, think of a similar movie like Looper from last year, or even Oblivion from last year, or Trance from last year, and see how fully realized those movies were. They're in the same universe as this movie, and somehow this movie wants to be Blade Runner, but it turns out to be more like a bad, like William Shatner episode of Star Trek on television. I mean, it has these grand ambitions, but they're not realized at all. I completely understand why this movie was in theaters only for 1 week. I think it shouldn't have even been there for a day. It's original, but it gives originality a bad name.
Yes, yeah, I had the exact words in my notes, gobbledygook. The problem is you don't get to invest in the characters, and it's so hocus-pocus, science gobbledygook, that it just doesn't pay off in the end, and that's why it failed on such a magnanimous level for me.
I'm going to have to be this movie's defense lawyer here a little bit. I mean, I hear everything you're saying, and I think, you know, I sat there just wanting for it to be better, if you know what I mean. So I never, again, it's like Wally Pfister's a friend of mine, and I really want to see his movie do well. And I admired everything about the movie in terms of its, you know, how well it was assembled. I mean, I think there's definitely very good plot lines here, but it's plotty rather than character driven. And I think if we'd had a little bit more of a character driven story of the Johnny Depp character, then it may have hit the mark a little closer, but it stuck to its kind of plotty sci-fi-ness and didn't give us much else to grasp onto here. So, yeah, I can't defend this movie very well. I just...
See, but my point is, I actually wish it had stuck to its guns more. I mean, it's beautiful to look at, but I think the whole problem is, and I don't know how much... What was it, the story which attracted
yes.
him, or what was it? Because I think that's where the problem lies, because the movie wants to have it both ways. It wants to be this big commentary on man versus machine about how, you know, eventually we are all going to give up to evil machines which are going to take over. And so my point is, if you want to be Blade Runner, then be Blade Runner. But then towards the end of the movie, it comes around and says, no, really, machines are really there to help you. And it's kind of, what the hell? Why is it so schizophrenic? You know, it's almost unafraid to make a point.
I think that was the point of the movie. I mean, there were a few redeeming factors for me. Okay, one was I think it had amazing special effects. Yes, and I agree with you. Production design was really good. Clearly, that's where the budget went for this movie instead of the story. I think that the good and the bad guys are very interchangeable depending on which side of the moral argument you stand on. So if you stand on the side that, you know, machines are there to help us and we should do everything to make these machines even more powerful, then your view of who's the good guy and the bad guy changes completely. And I kind of admire the film for doing that. And the moral question of, you know, what is life? What's the soul of a person? Can you collect that soul? You know, that whole existential argument was very good. But it just didn't deliver. The idea, the concept was so good. It just didn't follow through.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a B movie, right? I mean, it's an episode of The Twilight Zone from the 70s. I mean, you know, it's that kind of...
But I think it has much loftier ambitions. It doesn't want to be a B movie.
But no. B movie in the sense of it's high concept, but not well fleshed out, right? I mean, it's taking that idea of what if we could move our consciousness into a computer? What if it was this, you know, super smart AI guy who believed in this stuff and he was the one who took control? So it's high concept in that kind of in that respect, right? It's one big idea instead of a fully fleshed out, well developed idea. It's just this one. It's like so many log lines that you hear about movies, right? It's like saying, "What if my cat could talk?" And then it just makes the movie on talking cats. You know, you still need the character stuff. You still need the stuff or the meat around that idea. You can't just say this is going to be a great movie. And I can't help but feel like that's what they did here. They were like, what if this happened? And yeah, then they just wrote 120 pages of script and shot it without really spending time on writes and rewrites to build the story.
And it's got acting heft. I mean, it's got Morgan Freeman and Johnny Depp. I mean, that's a lot of budget to spend on actors. And Rebecca Hall.
Yeah, I mean, let me talk about the acting in a minute, but this is exactly the problem with the movie is it's a great concept, which is so poorly realized. And you know, I think that's where the problem is. And that's why I don't know who dropped the ball on that. Because, you know, look at a movie like Looper from last year, which is also based on a similar concept. But look how well, you know, even Oblivion is so much better realized than this. So
yeah, it's the writing team. I think the for me, it's all at the writer's door, right? They've gotten wrapped up in what this concept is, and they failed to add many of the elements that we look for in movies.
Yeah. And about the casting, I mean, God, Morgan Freeman wasted, Cillian Murphy wasted, Johnny Depp wasted. And if the movie has any emotional heft at all, I think it's because of Rebecca Hall,
yeah.
Who, you know, bless her heart. I mean, she is one of the finest actors right now, and she never gets a chance in Hollywood. And I feel terrible that she gets this huge, big role in such a poorly realized film. But she's aces in it. I mean, I just love her.
Both her and Paul Bettany, I thought, were really very good in this film.
Agree. I mean, I can see why Johnny Depp spends so much of his time in costume, because really, he's not that good an actor in my book when he's not, you know, wearing a wig and a crazy costume.
See, I think this is the best I've seen him in years. I mean, I'm sick and tired of him locking around sets pretending to act, whereas here I think he did convince me as the kind of, you know, mad scientist type.
Okay, enough about this.
Yes, he's got to respond.
No, I mean, I know. So I no contest. I think Johnny Depp is a great actor. Only he hasn't had chance to flex his acting skills yet.
Oh, my God. How many years is it going to take, Yazdi?
I don't know. But certainly it wasn't very evident in this. I mean, I actually don't even think he's a good fit for this role. I think this role called for somebody who had a little bit more evil inherently built into their personality. You know, Johnny Depp comes off as too sweet almost for this particular role, for me at least. And I did want to make a comment on, you know, Wally Pfister as well. The movie starts, the first shot in the movie is of a glass pane, and there's water drops falling down it. And then this kind of water falling, you know, trickling down glass, kind of repeats repeatedly through the movie. There's water falling on flowers. There's water falling on sand. It's not a car commercial. It's a movie. I mean, we understand that he's a great cinematographer, but just because something is pretty, you don't need to put it in the movie. I mean, it has no relevance. Water trickling down glass, even metaphorically, has no relevance to this movie. And this just tells me this guy is great at what he does, but he's not ready to be a director. I mean, not that I'm some big expert, but it just seemed very indulgent to me.
I think he took on a little much as a first-time director with this script. I mean, I think that's part of the problem here. But the water stuff does become relevant in the last scene, right? If you can recall what happens there in the last scene, and when we kind of understand what is left over, you can see why that theme plays out over and over throughout the movie. But
it's overcooked.
Well, he's a visual guy. I mean, that's ultimately what this comes down to. As a director, he's always going to be a very visual director, because that's where he comes from. Just needs to spend a little bit more time on story next time.
Okay, let's wind this one up. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
So I'll repeat what I said at the start. I mean, this film is just 2 hours of gobbledygook. You know, it's a great concept, which unfortunately doesn't get anywhere. I give it a very generous 4 out of 10. It's a failure at every level.
Joe?
I want to go last because I want this review to end upon a positive
note. Okay, fair enough. So this is what I've learned during this podcast. If you're a friend of Joe's, make a movie, because he'll do a really bad review of it, in the sense that it's not a very accurate review of what you really think of the movie. So A, if you're a friend of Joe's, make a movie, because you'll get a good score on Movie Wallace. And secondly, my own review of this film fails because it lacks heart and soul, because Johnny Depp literally Skypes in his performance.
Score.
4 out of 10.
Ouch. And we'll end with a 7, an incredibly generous 7, because I think this movie does have flaws. But, you know, I can't at any point ever admit to the fact that, you know, I didn't want to run screaming from the theater, right? I didn't want to. I was engaged in this movie from start to finish. I never thought this is horrendous gobbledygook like the two of you obviously did. I was just interested in where it was going. It just didn't get to where I wanted it to get to. And I think that's just because we're so used to the apocalyptic ending. And this movie plays a very different card. But 7 out of 10. And somebody please give Wally another chance. I mean, he's blown somebody's $100 million on a movie that's completely failed at the box office. So I'm very fearful for his career at this point. But...
I think he'll be very gainfully employed. Maybe not as a director, but nobody can take away, you know, what a fine director of photography he is.
If nothing else, Chris Nolan gets his DP back.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, in my notes, and this is what I written in my notes, that I always thought it was a figure of speech, but I literally, and I'm not making this up, I found myself counting the minutes until the movie would end. I was like, okay, it's going to end in 1 more minute. No, 2 more minutes. Come on, it's got to end any time now.
Are you serious?
I think the other thing that annoyed me was there was this, like, as in every Chris Nolan movie, a big Hans Zimmer type score that wasn't done by Hans Zimmer. I think it wanted to be so much more than it ended up being. Poor Wally Pfister.
Well, I still love you, Wally.
Okay.
I mean, there's no question about it. This is very original, okay? We haven't seen this before. I just wished it had been realized.
All right. Mail at movierollers.com. Let us know what you think of Transcendence and Captain America. Twitter.com/movierollers and Facebook.com/movierollers as well. We'll wrap up for tonight. So until our next episode, it's a good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.